So we don't have enough for a quorum, so we can't vote on anything, but we're planning on voting on anything.
We're just gonna review.
Just gonna review some stuff.
Because what we do is make a recommendation, right? We can make a recommendation without voting.
Yeah, and I think the stuff that came up at the meeting is not stuff that I think that everybody is in agreement of, you know, basically the catch of the language issue and then sort of some intent thing, so. And so we can't approve the minutes, so we can't do that. So we'll do that at the next meeting. What do you want to go over the meeting?
Yeah. Do we have any materials on that to people look at, or?
No. What's that?
I can just talk.
Go ahead, talk, and I can.
And you can edit it.
Wrap up the end.
Edit it. Okay. There were three speakers. The first speaker was Ann Deeds, representing APIC. She was a former president. One more time, I think, with APIC.
Yes.
A local chapter. And since all of her colleagues, oh, good.
Hi, this is Sean. Who just joined?
Hi, Keisha Raritas.
Hi, Keisha.
Hey, Sean.
We are, we don't have a quorum today, so we skipped over the approval of the minutes.
Okay.
And Woody is giving a summary of the rules meeting that happened last week.
Okay.
So that's where we are. Thanks for joining.
Do you want to introduce who's here? Why don't we, Keisha, why don't we introduce who's here? This is Woody English, and to my right,
Jim Dammer.
Sean Palmer.
Mary Post. Kathy Elias. Dee Dee Dying.
And that's it, just the six of us and you. So that's seven. And you're
okay.
The first to call in. Anyway, at the hearing last week, there were three speakers. The first was Ann Eads, who presented testimony representing the APIC Professional Association. And she had two requests in particular. The first was that when we talk about starting January 1st, 2009, that we're not counting the surgical site infection that appears January 1st, 2009, but we're counting January 1st, 2009 as the date of the surgery for any infections that occur after January 1st, 2009. Because there would have been the possibility that somebody might have had surgery on a knee, for example, in February of 2008 that was discovered in January 2009, which would be less than 12 months after, and it would be counted in January 2009, and that's not count attempt. So the surgery date marks January 1st, the startup date. For bloodstream infections, it would be the date of the infection, but for surgical site infections, it is the date of surgery that's defined by January 1st. The second point had to do with the amount of time it takes to go through all of the data and the possible infections that might be occurring to distill out the ones that the infection control practitioners actually meant to define clearly as an infection and be able to report that with all of the richness that's required by NHSN. The current rules say that the reporting should be done by the 15th of the month following. In other words, for the month of January, we would expect the reports to be for the 15th of February, according to the rules. The practical aspect is that currently NHSN reporting is done 3 months after, so the January data would be due in, you can help me with this, would it be March or April?
I think they gave it more time.
So the NHSN, to clarify, the NHSN is no later than 30 days after the end of the collection month. So if somebody verifies and says, yes, we had a surgery site infection on January 2nd, they have 30 days to report that event after, so they have until the end of February to report that one. The 15th that you're referring to and the 90-day and the quarterly submission is the CMS data.
Right.
So the process of the skip measures.
Right.
So there are different timetables as far as when they're reporting, and I think that's where some of the comments were happening.
Right, and the request was that it, for NHSN data, that that also be allowed to be later.
There were several hospitals, we had a conference call, and there were several hospitals that were very concerned about that time frame, and even felt that their ITG systems, their information systems that they utilize, would not have data for them until, I want to say it was about 90 days out. I think they were hoping for maybe a four-month delay in reporting surgical site data, which was the big one.
The reason for that is that you're dependent upon the information systems of the hospital to give you the denominator data. And the way it's done in some hospitals is so convoluted that you can't get that from a doctor. You just can't get it.
So how does it work if they're supposed to report it to NHSN by the 30 days? Are they all running late?
And that's the question.
They typically run late.
Yeah. And I think that this is the NHSN standard. This isn't necessarily a number that we came up with. This is sort of the language right from NHSN. So I don't know. I'll have to find out what happens if they report late. I can't imagine.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see what NHSN actual reporting periods look like if they can chart out when they hear from hospitals with surgical data.
Say that out loud one more time. It's 30 days from when? From the infection or from the end of the month?
From the end of the calendar month where the infection occurs.
So it could be almost 2 months.
It could be almost 2 months.
So if you have a procedure that's done January 31st, you're going to follow it for at least 30 days after that. And that was probably bad when it was sick. February has 28 days. But, you know, you would report then after that, some period after.
So you'd have at least 30 days. On average, you'd have 45 days.
Well, you'd have up to
you'd have 60 half.
Days or more after the surgical procedure.
Yeah, okay, we're saying two takes on the same thing. Yeah.
So, it, you know, again, it's what we found is the bulk of our procedures will declare themselves, infections will declare themselves postoperatively within about a 2 to 3 month period that pressure comes. And I think what we're hearing is that their financial data systems that allow them to get electronic data to use for NHSN to get that download takes several months.
So if it takes 3 months to say, 3 months post-surgery to find an infection, and then it's verified as an infection. After that 2 to 3 months, there still needs to be an additional couple months in order to get the data. So then 30 days from the infection verification, they still need. Does that make sense?
I think they were looking for 3 to 4 months delay after the date of service.
After the date of service.
Did she specify?
I have her handout here. What she says is, because surgical surveillance is especially labor-intensive, APIC recommends at least 90 days for reporting after the end of the collection month. Under A, Section B, 4 months is allowed for skip antibiotic process measures. So she's piggybacking on the fact that a skip can do it, why can't we? Most hospitals experience significant delays in getting required surgical procedure information, denominator data from surgical departments, and it's often incomplete. This time, very few hospitals in the country are able to electronically upload data from their surgical systems directly into NHSN data system. NHSN requires 12 to 20 field entries for each surgical denominator. That's not for infection, that's just people going through surgery. So if you have 500 cases a year, that's 12 to 20 data points for those 500 cases, and you can get no infections that you have to enter into the file. And it's just kind of slow. It's not a fast computer system. It's just scared to stare at the screen waiting for it to think a lot. So.
Oh, I want to comment on that. Did she mean that the system is slow or putting it in is slow? Because when we did our training, they did, remember they told people on the West Coast, don't do your data entry in the morning, do it in the late afternoon because people in the East Coast are doing theirs, and it really makes it slow. So I don't know if you want to get that out to the people.
That's an idea.
She did, remember she told us about, do it when they've all gone home.
Yep.
After one, yeah.
Does somebody join us on the phone?
Yeah, John Towns joined.
Oh, hi, John.
Is everybody uploading electronic data? Is that how it typically works, or people?
Not everybody is, but I think people want to, as much as possible. I know we're trying really hard to get a system that will download directly. Saves a lot of time.
I don't have an opinion for or against, but just to play with the time a little bit. If the current system is, everyone says, is the best, how is it that the hospitals that are in the program are able to meet the deadline?
I don't think they're compliant with the published NHSN guidelines of 30 days after the procedure. There are many that have delayed reporting.
Then what happens at the other end if the state is going to, how often will the state publish data? By the proposed model, if it's 4 months, we will have, it'll be at least 4 months after an infection before you actually have data. If there's another lag, you won't ever be able to publish current data. It will always be at least 4, probably at least 6 months behind.
Yeah, and we're supposed to.
And does that matter, given what your reporting expectations are? We start with old data. Is that okay?
I think we don't start reporting until several months after January.
It's going to be at least a 4 month lag to have data in the data set, and then there'll be some additional potential lag to actually do something with it and report it.
That would correlate with what comes out on the other stuff, right? The court measures.
Yeah. So that's
probably. Well, they'll all be timely in the same periods.
Well, they'll also be similarly untimely.
Yeah.
Core measures are not all that timely. We're now looking at core measures are what, July 2007, I think.
But I think it would be good to do it that way, to correlate it so that we're looking at the same period of time instead of off.
Well, I think that my issue with this is this 30 days a strong recommendation, or is it a requirement for submission? Because if it's a requirement for submission, that's very different. If it's a strong recommendation of please get this in by 30 days, but we'll still accept it even if you submit it late, I'm more comfortable with leaving it at the 30 days to try to push people to get it in sooner versus saying you have 4 months and then, I mean, and then be late.
Yeah.
So
that's what National Health Safety Network asks for, correct?
But I don't think they're, from what Mary's saying, I don't think they can. My impression is they're not kicking back data. I mean, that's my impression when it says 30 days. If it's really a requirement that it has to be within 30 days, they're refusing data. I mean, they're not taking
the data.
There's system requirements, though, for it. So you have to report 6 months worth of things.
What they say, and then see how it turns out.
Yeah.
I think the reality is NHSN themselves only report periodically. They were supposed to come out with reports every 6 months. They were delayed a good, I don't know if it was six, I mean, it must have been at least 6 months, if not a year, that they were delayed.
It was a year. We went for a year without data from them.
Yeah.
How
did the reports get put in? Is it sort of everybody who had surgery in January, then 3 or 4 months later, there's this big upload of all of those people, or is it everybody had surgery in January, and then infections trickle in, and we report everything we know about at that point, but not necessarily. So,
to be able to enter a case, you first off have to have the denominator in. So your denominator is information on every single surgical case that you're following. So if you pick up a cardiac infection, you have to have that patient's basic denominator data entered into NHSN before you can enter in the actual patient-specific infection information. So it's kind of a two-part process for each patient.
But is it reliable that those denominators would come in sort of in monthly chunks?
Well, what we're hearing from some of our hospitals is they're not getting that big flex of data for several months out.
Well, right, but several months later, they would give you a bunch of stuff. You get cases from January. Could we say January's in, all of January's in at that point? Or might they, or are they just doing kind of half-half?
Well, remember, too, with the definitions for infections, your infections may begin in a year out.
No, I understand. I'm talking about the denominators.
Yeah.
Did you, all of the January denominator come in at once, or is it sort of trickling in?
I think it depends on your organization. Every organization may have a little different process.
Because we could just report what we've got. We have the whole denominator. We'll sort of report what we've got. We say this hospital hasn't reported yet. This hospital has reported. Here's their rate. So far.
Yeah. I definitely agree that I think basically the 30 days after the month is too tight for surgical. And I would support trying to go maybe a 3-month or a 4-month. I think there is some effort that hospitals have to put into this. We ourselves are having to work with our electronic computer systems to meet these guidelines. So I would opt for something reasonable. I do think at least 90 days out. Our core measures, we get 4 months out after the fact. Is that right? For the...
The skin measures?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. 4 months for skin.
4 months for skin?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes sense to try and line up the time frames for both. So if somebody has a high rate, you can see how they're doing in terms of the antibiotic timing.
Let me, I'll call CDC after the meeting and find out more information about the 30 days and what it actually means. And then shoot an email back out to the group probably tomorrow. See where people are. I mean, I think that not only, Mary, your comments, but we've been hearing that from many hospitals thinking they can't meet a 30-day requirement for a variety of reasons, whether it be technology, staff, they just don't think they can do the good work by then, that sort of stuff. So it's odd to me that CDC still has a 30-day if it's really a hard and fast 30 days. So let me find out, and then I'll get back to everybody.
If we did change it, we make it hard and fast.
What's that?
It was changed to 3 months or 4 months.
We could make it hard and fast because of our authority to fine for submission of data. So if we made a hard and fast 3-month rule, we could, if we're getting late submissions from hospitals, we could fine them if we could stop there. Not that we want to do that, but.
I mean, that would be one way to do it, is to extend. Say, okay, this is going to take time. We'll extend it to 4 months. But it's a hard 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a mushy 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
This is Woody. What we're doing is going through the public testimony from last week and just reviewing the position of APIC that was presented by Ann Eads. She made 3 points. We talked about the first two. The first is the date of the surgery, the surgical site infections. It would be January 1st, 2009 or after. The second topic we just talked about, which was reporting, and their request was for 90 days after the end of the collection month. And the third point was that since many hospitals report lots of information to NHSN for the purpose of improving their performance in the hospital, the state has a declared interest only in certain infections, that only those infections be released by NHSN to the state, not the hospital's entire database.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a strong request also from APIC, and that seemed reasonable too.
Yeah, and that process will happen in the conferring rights. So what will happen is a new group will be set up. So for St. Vincent's, as an example, if they're already in NHSN, they will join the Oregon HAI group and only allow us as the administrator of that group to see particular measures. So we won't see everything submitted. We'll just see sort of the procedures that we're looking for.
The second person to testify was...
NHSN will continue its specialized program at the national level? So there are a few hospitals in Oregon that submit data now. Those hospitals will continue? Those hospitals will have a double burden?
No. They'll continue to do what they've always done. The state's just requested one service line or two service lines, or three service lines.
So the state is a subset of
Resources. Yeah.
So they don't have to do anything more. Got it.
Was somebody on the phone trying to say something? I had to turn up the volume.
No, I just said, this is John, I said all of those three things you reviewed sounded fine to me.
Okay. The second person to testify was one date from the Hospital Association, who essentially endorsed all three points that Annie's presented, and also pointed out that there are only 12 hospitals in the state now that are currently submitting information to NHSN. There are, 57 hospitals in the state. So that means that there are 45 hospitals that need to learn this technology in half a year. And the Hospital Association will try to corral them and arrange for training sessions and teaching sessions. And she said, the final words are, the state must expect and understand that the first year reporting may be a bit bumpy.
There actually was a lot of concern expressed our monthly teleconference about, do the smaller hospitals even know that this is happening right now? And a real concern about how we really cast a net out to them. Our group is very willing to work and try and mentor and help educate as well, but they just were very concerned that people don't know what's going on.
From my perspective in dealing with the Hospital Association, they have been trickling information to them, and we haven't made a concerted effort yet as an office to tell people what's going to broadcast to the world what we're doing, because we wanted to make sure that we had something as in stone as we could before we start making communications to be consistent. So as soon as, what a week from today happens, we'll be putting out some pretty heavy information to our contacts with each of the hospitals, and also collaborating with the Hospital Association to figure out in APIC, figure out who the people who would really need to touch are on this, not just whoever's on our mailing list, whoever we have good addresses for.
It would be helpful if they could identify they're required to identify who their infection control specialist will be, that maybe each hospital is bound to identify that person with contact information. And then if we can help, again, work with people, I think everybody's interested in APIC, again, is that we have similar methodologies and processes.
Okay. And then the third person to testify was Dee Dee Valier, and she had 2 points. The first was conception. Four of HAI reporting on hospitals, the word should is employed in the rules, and it says the IECP should use follow-up surveillance methods, and then lists 5 different methods. She says that the word should be replaced by the word shall, and she's correct, right? So we'll make that change.
I'm sorry, so should is optional, but shall...
Right, and the rules should say shall. But the purpose of the rules is to say shall.
Shall say should?
One is shall do one of the following, not shall do all of them.
Yeah.
I guess the difference that we sort of got entangled in is we didn't want to say
you have to
use all 5.
Yeah, you don't use the word should in Bulgarian. I mean, syntax.
It's a may or a shall.
Okay. So basically, as long as the hospital uses one of those methods.
Yeah. But they shall. They shall do it. Right, Dee Dee? They shall.
What page?
It's page 4 of 7 on your packet.
It's not easy.
And it is
second point is that we talked about benchmarking and doing the reporting part of this, or the disclosure part of this, and she wants to be sure that the benchmarking includes national benchmarks and not just local benchmarks, which also seems very reasonable. I don't see if there's any issue with that. The question is that something that needs to be embedded in the rules, or is that something that we as a committee recommending how the reporting should go out is in the discretion? The rules are pretty concise and terse. I think we have control over that anyway, what's going to be, how the report's going to be sorted out. That's really our committee function. So the question is, should we put that into the rules or not? So that's open for discussion.
That was under that section on public reporting, because it does say disclose publicly updated facility and state level, but it doesn't say national. So I thought it's only going to be specific for facility state level. Facility and state levels to national.
Yeah, the intent there is, We will, as an office and as a committee, will have control over the facility level and state level data. We won't have control over the national data. We just had the conversation about not seeing an HSN data for a year. So don't want to necessarily tie ourselves in the rule to say we're going to have national benchmarks when we may not. But in our public disclosure, in our public reporting sort of bylaws and principles, we'll have it in there if it's available. But
I got an email back from them and they said that. That they plan to, the last one did include VA and SSI national level, but we plan to publish 2007 NHSN data this year. This report will include both the VA and the SSI data. So they will be, from now on out, putting it in every year.
I could go with a May. Go back to our shell and may include national benchmarks as available and as appropriate. But I would agree with Sean to tie ourselves to something we're at the mercy of whether they can fulfill that commitment.
All right.
And we don't need to say may in order to do it.
Yeah.
I was wondering if it was intentionally written that way because in the same section under using the data. It says may use the data, and it does include the national there. So that's why I just thought maybe it was left out because we aren't going to be using it. Under number five, it says the office may use statistically valid data to make comparisons by facility and state, regional, and national statistics. So I was wondering, as long as we, agree that if it's there, we can use it, and should use it, that's fine.
I think there's actually a real advantage in using it there. I think, again, before my civics lesson, which this process is teaching me, I would have gone along with what you're saying, but what I've learned is that if the state can't control it, then the state really can't mandate it. And I've lived through at least 1 year in which NHSN promised data for that year, and it never came. It never came. It was part of their transition from the old method to the new method. So we were reporting our benchmark data back 2 years because it never came. And if we mandate that at the state level, we have no control over it, then we're in violation of our rules. And so we try to avoid that. And that's what I learned in my civics lesson.
Yeah.
Is that
cool.
Correct?
Right. No, I agree.
So I think we need to be really careful about that. So I think we can have every intent to do it, but to put it in the rules is something that we have to do, I think, is probably not the most sophisticated way of writing rules.
I agree.
I just was going to add that at this point, they haven't published new surgical benchmarks for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, we're going back to, 2006 or 2005?
She just emailed me and told me that they are, 2004. But she said their intention, which again, is they plan to do it this year, start publishing that again on the national level. because they finally got enough data that they can actually do that, so.
I would agree with the sentiment that we shouldn't hardwire a shaft because of all the reasons discussed. I wouldn't be against putting in a may, however, even though it's not logically necessary, it is a matter of emphasis to remind folks that there were some expectations about attempting to do it.
Well, I think the committee could exhort Sean to link or find whatever data are available.
I think it's done, though, isn't it? It's done.
What's done?
We don't have any more comments to make changes.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we can change it from now until the end of the week. Yeah, that's why we had this meeting. Yeah, no, I mean, there's not going to be another public venue.
That's right.
And public comment is over at 5 today, so unless we get any more.
The state can accept or refute or not accept public comment. Mm-hmm. They will not do so with some trepidation, but they don't have to. But this question of who keeps the faith here? You put something in rule versus you have a committee to mind the store. I don't have a sense of the institutional sacredness of this committee going forth.
If we put it in the minutes of this meeting, you know, and Sean is slacking on it, then we can sort of
call
point,
him on
point, yeah.
Yeah, and anybody who's read anything that comes out of our office, we're looking for national benchmarks, national standards, anywhere we can get them. So it would be a departure from what we normally do to not produce national benchmarking with the regular reports. So.
Okay, finally coming. So getting back to the agenda.
I'll dive in right here since Jim brought up about what's going forward from here. So public comment officially ends at 5 today. So if we don't receive any more comments, and those are the only comments we've received are the ones that Woody sort of went over, haven't received anything over email or any other written testimony. It ends at 5.
Is this supposed to be a public meeting for comment?
No, not for comment.
That already happened.
That happened last week, yeah. Did you have some comments?
He's wondering if we're in violation of public meeting law.
Yeah. And then we have to have our final language to DHS by the end of the week, which shouldn't be a problem with the changes we're suggesting here. And then an official officer's report that will summarize the comments from the public comment period will be sort of drafted up and released sometime after July 1. They want to obviously get the rules in place and get them done before July 1 and then finish up the officer's report and doing exactly what Jim was talking about, where with each comment we have to address why we did include it or why we didn't include it and sort of, you know, have some rationale behind it. So that's sort of the process from here. So then we'll be up and going July 1 officially. Okay.
Just one question. I was looking for this section where we talk about if you find an infection at another facility, you're required to report to that facility. Do you recall that section? In the minutes? Or in our conversation?
I recall a lot of conversation about it, but it never being in a report. No. I mean, we were. I think the compromise or the piece that we added in, based on that conversation, was the section 4 on page 407, where we're talking about the follow-up surveillance piece.
Yeah.
And that was added in.
Yeah,
that was.
We didn't put that in the rules, but we were going to discuss it when we got into the long-term care facilities, how we kind of address that, because we can put that in to make it more clear because a lot of people don't know, but it actually has to do with when they're transferred to a different facility. Right now we're only doing hospitals, so that was kind of how we had resolved that.
In the discussion, I was going forward to report it, then, so it's not
yeah.
Like that during practice.
Right.
Okay.
So, is that a conclusion?
So there's nothing in the rules.
Yeah.
Not keep it that way.
Yeah.
Right now. This time.
Yeah. But I think what we said is when we move into updating the rules to include the long-term
revised work plan, draft work plan, which was a handout, right?
Yeah, and I apologize for the folks on the phone. I couldn't get it out in time, but I'll try to send it to you as soon as the meeting's over here. So bear with us. Sure. So Woody and I met last week after the public hearing and started talking about clearly the first thing that we need to do is get information out to hospitals, start getting stuff in front of them, start talking about how we're going to train them and how we're going to make sure that they're training, and sort of as quickly as possible ramp them up and get them comfortable with the system in a very short amount of time. I'll just go ahead and read through a couple of the tasks or how I see some of the months playing out between now and October, actually, and talk about some of the things that I know we need to do and then add some things as we have a discussion here. So for June, the things we have to sort of finish up is the hearings officer reports, revise this work plan, sort of some content development for the trainings. I think now that we know, and I'm going to have conversations with, I've had conversations with the CDC and the Hospital Association about what they're willing to do to figure out how we can supplement what AHSN has on their website, which is 13 and a half hours of trainings, versus what we know we need to do on the ground level that Woody and I have talked about, really the nuts and bolts of getting people in the same room together and figuring out how to work the system and not just going through. So that's what I'm sort of talking about is training development. AHSN doesn't really have a quote-unquote requirement. I mean, you have to watch the videos, but it's all sort of self-reported. I completed these on this date. So I think they're just going to be much more intensive in-persons or support groups that we're going to try to set up. So facilities that have never done this feel like they have somebody to lean on that's been doing this for a little while. Because I think things are going to come up that we're not going to be able to answer, other than the folks that have been doing this quite a long time. So that sort of leads into development of document to send to OHAS and hospitals, sort of outlining what the requirements are, what the reporting system is. Almost a two to three page brief outlining the rules and what our expectations are and what our sort of plan is, our tentative plan. I am meeting with Gwen and Diane Waldo from the Hospital Association on Friday. To talk about what the intent of outreach is going to be and how we're going to do it and what we're going to do. We already have some time lined up in the third week, between the third and fourth week of July, for CDC to lead a webinar for anybody that wants to join in, that will go through the enrollment, the joining a group, and the conferring of rights, so the first three steps that every hospital has to do to get in. And then they will sort of disengage themselves and assist us as we need them, but that's really the only thing they have currently to support a statewide drive. So then that leads us to discussion from OHAS about doing some in-person trainings after people have viewed all the training materials from NHSN and getting groups together in a room for a day, two-day conference, or whatever it might be, to figure out what else we need to do and who we need to get in the room to make sure this thing works. So that's sort of to be determined. Those are the first three steps, I guess, that we're taking now and we'll be taking probably through this week and probably in the next week. I'm trying to get things set up. So this is where APIC comes in to start getting us some contact names to help us get a group together, at least get the key folks at each hospital saying who's the person that this needs to be. And then I think one of the key roles of the Hospital Association in this is, was one of Woody's points last week, was making sure that the administration is bought in on this and they have to commit resources and they have to commit staff to doing this if they want to do it right. Because it's going to take some time, especially up front, for them to get trained and then to do this. It's going to be a lot of work between now and December.
Our recommendation for resources would be?
I don't necessarily know if we'll have like a recommendation like you need 3 FTE to do this. I think my recommendation is going to be you need to have somebody at your facility who's going to be designated, who's your ICP designee, whether it really is an infection control practitioner or it's, you know, their head of nursing or whoever it might be, someone that is in charge of doing this at their facility, and then whatever other resources they think they need to sort of make it happen. That would be my recommendation, but that's, I don't think we're going to know until they get in.
This is actually a data collection function. So what the infection control practitioner does is to identify what constitutes a nosocomial infection case. If we burden the infection control practitioner or set this up, so the infection control practitioner is thought to be the only person that can collect the denominator data and enter this information, then we're not going to get good infection control in the hospitals, and we're going to cut ourselves short. So I think that in talking with the administrators, we need to let them frame this in the context of, this is a data management issue. We need people who are expert in data management who are going to be responsible for entering the data and submitting the data. And the infection control practitioner rides on top of that to see that the data entry person has the correct information to enter in terms of what constitutes an infection. The rest of it should happen almost blind to the infection control practitioner in a sense. Do you agree with me?
No, I think that's ideal. I think, unfortunately, that whole thing kind of falls into infection controls.
If we're not careful, we're going to create unintended bad consequences because the hospital administrator is going to say, oh, this is an infection control problem because it involves reporting infections. The infection control practitioner can do it. The infection control practitioner has a limited amount of time and then can no longer go out and educate, can no longer go out and be proactive at preventing infections in the hospital because they're mired in reporting data. Two things will happen. One is, one task won't be done, but they're very important to stay ahead of everything. And second, there are a lot of people who are practicing infection control in hospitals who, when saddled with this kind of information, will have incredible job dissatisfaction, probably quit. And then we will have stripped our state because they're in high demand and they can go work in California, Washington, or some other place. We will have created a bad situation. So I think we need to be very careful about how we frame this so we don't create some unintended serious consequences in the long run.
How does NHSN deal with this? Do they see it as a technical issue? Do they see it as an infection control issue? I mean, how do they,
well, they
recommend staffing their data collection?
You know, their staffing has been very slow to come out with a recommendation. Initially, it was you need one ICP for, I want to say, 100 beds, and that was probably 5 or 10 years ago, and so realistically it probably needs to be dropped even more now. But I know that they have a weak comments about ensuring you have, you know, administrative support, clerical support, as well as ITG support as well. So I mentioned they had a report that actually is, I want to say, over 10 years now about state-of-the-art infection control programs, and very outdated to the point where they're recommending modems. Every program has a modem. So our hope is that the national group will revise those and update those for the infrastructure for programs.
I think the effective deployment of person hours to this task recognizes that this is primarily data acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
It's not professional. It's not what we've spent years training and infection control practitioners. And granted, in some hospitals, there's an awful lot of multitasking overlap and sort of shared responsibilities and cross-training. But in larger hospitals, this is clearly something that will take us a chunk of an FTE to manage the data, and therefore in budgeting for how the hospital should be setting it up. I think they should be thinking of this in terms of a data management position, not hiring another infection control practitioner or expanding the role of the infection control practitioner.
And they need to do both. I think, again, it's hard to be prescriptive in each setting.
Is there some carrot here? Is there something that's uniquely useful to hospitals to do this? That they're gaining a new way to look at their own data, they're gaining a more coherent view, a more consistent view of their own information to manage inside their own hospital, not the public reporting piece, which is going to go on anyway, but as part of the value proposition, what they're getting for the
work. Well, they are required the new Joint Commission patient safety goals now have requirements that hospitals basically implement the bundles process improvement efforts and have surveillance for central lines for surgical site infections. I don't recall if ventilator-associated pneumonia has made the cut, but drug-resistant organisms also were in there. So by participating in this program, you actually meet several new reporting requirements for CMS, for state, as well as for Joint Commission now.
We'll probably figure that out, but that might be part of reminding people of that there is something in and of itself useful to them.
Right. Any cost?
Cost
and quality.
I would like to see this bundle as a quality improvement project as opposed to simply, oh, it's painful, but we're going to make it less painful.
Right.
I mean, that's part of it. But the sell isn't simply that we're going to make a painful thing less painful. There is a good here.
So the big chunk of July is going to be a continuation of sort of the start of what we've just been talking about is, you know, getting the word out to the hospitals, finalizing some sort of communication strategy between both our office, the committee, and the Hospital Association and APIC. Trying to figure out and develop what an in-person training might look like and what are sort of the essential elements. We had a little bit of a conversation last week about piggybacking on, and I'll know more about this after I meet with the Hospital Association, and piggybacking with some of their sort of cohort training. They have rural hospital support groups and peer groups and sort of grouping hospitals together. So they have a group, say, you know, we know that a lot of the metro hospitals are probably already in HSN. Maybe they take on 3 or 4 or 5 rural hospitals to sort of help and mentor them through the process versus having to get together a whole giant group together. Or do we regionally group them together? Do we say all the Willamette Valleys together and everybody in Eastern Oregon together? I mean, sort of figuring out what makes the most sense and using the experience of the 11 to 12 hospitals that are already in HSN and figuring out how to use them wisely because they're going to be a step ahead of a majority of the hospitals. Some of the initial thoughts are if you start the training, say, in August, have maybe one or two or however many we have in August, try to finish the in-person style trainings by September. How do you stage them? Do you do all the small, you do all the rural hospitals that have no experience first and then let them get into it and quote-unquote make mistakes in the fall and be able to fix them before they go in? Or do we do sort of a piece of each or something like that? So all that stuff I think we should be thinking about what makes the most sense, and hopefully the Hospital Association has some good ideas about what's worked for them for previous programs. So then August would be having the training materials finalized. We have our implementation strategy finalized. So that would be August. September, thinking about our next iteration of rules, to think about what we want to do about Vermont-Oxford, which is the NICU reporting. So allow staff to do a little bit of work about what it actually is, what it means, be able to give you much more information about what the detail is behind it. And then start talking about, I think nursing facilities are probably the next talk because I have some pretty good information from them already, so I can talk about them tomorrow if we needed to, but I'm not going to do that. And then sort of an update in September of what's been working and what hasn't been working and how we fix things, maybe do some ad hoc training, maybe there needs to be some additional materials we need to develop to help support them for their sort of final push of training to get going for January 1. And then in October, to look at the dialysis center module for HSN that's already sort of up and running. And then the mysterious surgery center module from HSN that no one's really seen, but people keep rumoring about, giving them a little bit more time before we start bugging them again about it. And then if it isn't appropriate or is appropriate, we'll talk about what kind of systems we want to place in the surgery centers so we can start beginning to think about rules come the first of the year next year. So we'll have a good amount of time before July 1. Any questions, comments, additions?
In September on number 2, what's that interesting about the nursing facilities or the CMS?
So nursing facilities currently report, and Kathy can talk more eloquently about this than I can, they report UTIs to CMS through their MDS, and I've seen a lot of those. I've seen their forms and talked to the folks at the Seniors and People with Disabilities program, and it probably will meet our initial requirements for maybe getting something up, but it might not be all that we want. But there's a system there, and they already have it in place, and they're already required to do it, so it sort of fits into the NHSN model of how we've been doing things. What's that?
They posted at least some of their data.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
So you can go see it.
Yep.
Go see it. CMS is approximately a year and a half behind.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. So what we would do, and it sounds really easy, is the way that it works is the state facilities basically submit it to DHS on a secure server, and then they release it to CMS, and all it would really take is them giving an agreement with our office, and we would have instant access to that. So we would have access a year ahead, a year and a half ahead of time than CMS would. So, and it would be, is what they tell me, as easy as flipping a switch off the server and getting the right agreements in place. So it's a system that's already there. Okay.
It's extremely simple, but
the yeah, it's a start. It's a good start. So.
Okay, what's the PAG on this for the staff, UAG, or
HHS? Staff is Uber, so myself and James and anybody else. All is everybody at the table here, and then the tag is the technical group. So if we start looking at some of the really nitty-gritty NHSN stuff that we don't want to necessarily take up a committee meeting with, to have the technical group either on a call or another meeting to say, you know, especially when you're talking about the in-person training. I mean, I'm already looking at, you know, you and Mary and John and Patricia and sort of the in-hospital folks to start thinking about what we need to make this happen at the ground level.
So that's our own internal issue.
Yeah. Yeah. And then OHAS is the hospital association. Yeah.
Can I ask where you are on Uber staff? I mean, are you fully staffed at this point? I can't remember how many FTEs were in the budget.
For this project?
Yeah.
There was one FTE for this program, yeah. Yeah, we get one FTE paid for. And this basically releases other money that we've always had for other FTE. So, yeah.
Are you volunteering?
No. Other kind of volunteer.
It's elected to train
one of the materials we developed to training sessions.
And the one FTE is not you.
It's not me. No, but
that doesn't matter. To be hired. Or that person's already...
No, it's James.
James? Okay.
Yeah, it's James. Sorry. So he's our hardcore data guy.
Got it.
So we'll be in collaboration to figure out how to get these materials ready. And then that's the discussion of what things need to look like. I mean, I just don't have any clear picture of what additional materials we're going to need. I know we're going to need some, but I just don't know what they're going to look like quite yet. That's all I got.
Okay, so that's the work plan for this.
Yeah, and I'll send that out to everybody electronically too. I didn't get a chance to send out to that.
On into the fall.
So June, are we still having a June 2nd Tuesday meeting?
A July 2nd Tuesday meeting?
When's our next meeting?
July.
Okay, so this June here.
Yeah.
Are we involved in this?
Well, the only thing we have to actually, like, really do is complete the hearing officer's report, which is addressing the comments that we got from the public rules.
Okay.
And that needs to be drafted because we just got the template for it today. But that'll be circulated to everybody as soon as it's in a format to be...
So our next meeting is July. Is that the end of July?
Yeah.
Here in Portland?
Details. I have down sale, but my calendar's been wrong before, so I'll email everybody. Okay. next piece is the overview of the facility administrator training requirements. I don't necessarily want to go through this in great detail and put everybody to sleep. But this is sort of the first foray of one of the first training materials that people have to sort of look at and go through. On page 3 of the document, it gives them actually a pretty good schematic of what they have to sort of do to get in. It's recommended on NHSN that they watch the overview, the two overviews. There's an hour and a half overview for bloodstream infections, and there's an hour and a half overview for the surgery site infections. It's a webcast. So they're recommended to watch both of those and read through the document before they do anything else. There's roughly 12 to 14 hours of webcast video on the CDC site, and we will be borrowing all that material and putting it on our website so facilities have easy access to it. And this is what facilities will have to, will be recommended for them to read this and watch those 3 hours of trainings before we do the webinar at the end of July. So they at least have some sort of teeth cutting on NHSN before we get CDC on the line, make sure we use best use their time.
Sean, you might have already mentioned this, but there are 12 hospitals in Oregon doing this. Can they be mentors?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's hopefully the model that we're gonna do. I mean, it's probably gonna be hard because they're gonna be NOHSU versus a small rural.
You know, I thought about 12 hospitals. You know, cause in my mind, it's gonna be really small or not.
I thought it was much smaller than that. I was surprised.
And I think the reality is, if you talk systems versus hospitals, you're dealing with smaller numbers. Mm-hmm. So I think like Legacy with their systems. Probably has about 4 hospitals that are falling out, and I expect Providence. How many of your hospitals are
admitting? We have 2 that are reporting data, and about 3 that are halfway into the training, so they should be reporting data pretty soon to NHS.
So I think if you look at the system, it's a smaller number, so it may, you know, I think what I'd like to do is really get with the APIC group and really talk to them about what their recommendation for training may be. And again, I know they're very willing to mentor and help, but we need to maybe look at, you know, think about what that's going to look like, especially if it requires people to go to different locations.
Yeah, there's the other issue, too. If you start to lean heavily on a few hospitals for the expertise of their personnel, they're not going to be able to do the job that they are budgeted to do. How do we get the hospitals willing to participate in this? It's quite dreary, in a sense. It's for the public good, but at the same time, they're not on task. The budget falls behind. Organization gets distressed, and so I think we ought to anticipate that and figure out what kind of strategy we want to apply to that. Maybe from the state or association hospitals and health systems. Mm-hmm. But there's got to be both a carrot and a stick involved, or else we're not.
You know, I'm thinking about Washington State, and they actually had, I don't know if it's a full FTE, but they have something designated to really take this on. Now, and she was a former infection control specialist, so I don't know. I'm assuming Oregon didn't budget such a resource with this. So.
What about the National Health Safety Network, Maggie, and those kinds of things?
They're very supportive, and they're willing to help any way they can. I think that the gap is they can talk all day and night about the technical issues with NHSN, definitions, how to upload things, quirks in the system. I think what we're talking about right now is on the ground, hospital level. I mean, that's where the rubber hits the road, that I think that NHSN isn't going to be able to provide that expertise to us. Maybe they haven't said this to me overtly, if they will. But they'll help us any way they can with the technical stuff.
Sean, do you know if when Diane checked with this Washington?
I'll meet with
them on Friday. You know, the feedback group is they really were very well organized, and they did a lot of safe tables, and they've actually spread their training out over a fair amount of time. But, you know, I wish we had maybe that worked a little bit.
And CDC just gave the same presentation that we're basically going to get at the end of July to Washington, and it was the first that I'd heard that they were even doing anything. So it'll be interesting, and I think that was one of the ideas from Gwen was, if they're in right around the same spot that we're in, is if we can maybe combine resources and figure out how to sort of collaborate together, that would be a nice way to get some expertise across both sides.
Or at least learn from them what's working and
what's not.
Yeah.
That's all I have for today.
We still didn't have a quorum, though.
Okay, is anybody still on the phone?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good. Do you have any questions?
No. Probably going to happen probably spring next year when we start thinking about it, because we're actually going to start maybe seeing some data by then, and we can start figuring out how it's looking and what it's looking like, and what we want to do is sort of measure the quality of it and see how it's looking. But yeah, thank you for that. That's a good point.
Any other comments? Then shall we adjourn?
I'll adjourn.
Thanks a lot for coming, everybody.
Okay, thank you all.